Hi again, everybody. I'm Dan Hoard, and this is the Bengals Booth Podcast following a season-opening 20-0 loss to the Baltimore Ravens. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play. Coming up, some radio replays from a discouraging day. I promise, not too many. We'll hear what several players had to say in the locker room after the game, and Dave Lapham will join me for a closer look at what went wrong. The entire podcast can't be a downer. In this week's Fun Facts interview, we'll hear some great stories from a member of the Bengals First 50, a guy that you voted as the 40th best retired player in Cincinnati Bengals history. But first, a quick look back at a dismal performance to begin the season. Before the Bengals ran their first play, they were penalized 5 yards for a false start. If that wasn't an omen for what was to come, I don't know what is. It was the first of 9 penalties. Before the drive was over, Andy Dalton was sacked for the first of 5 times.
Shotgun snap to Dalton. He drops straight back to throw. Has to scramble to the right. There's a penalty flag down, and Andy is pulled down by the ankles by Terrell Suggs.
Baltimore answered with a 13-play drive that ended with a Justin Tucker field goal, and the Ravens led 3-0. Hard to believe that was enough to win the game. It was still 3-0 in the second quarter when the Bengals drove from their own 5 to the Baltimore 9. That's when Dalton made a critical mistake.
From the Baltimore 9-yard line, Andy has the ball, drops back to throw, fires into the end zone, intercepted by C.J. Mosley.
That was one of 5 Bengals turnovers. Here's center Russell Bodine.
Give credit to them. They played well, but at the same time, we didn't help ourselves. You know, penalties, turnovers, lack of red zone efficiency, the things we talk about every week, we didn't get done today, and that's not winning football.
It was still 3-0 with 2 minutes left in the half when the Bengals allowed Joe Flacco to complete his only pass all day that went for more than 15 yards.
Flacco has the ball, short drop, quick throw, slant, caught, look out, running down the middle of the field, and heading for the end zone is Jeremy Maclin. Untouched on a 48-yard sprint.
So now it's 10-0. The Bengals got the ball back with 1:47 left in the half and all 3 timeouts remaining. Try to score, right?
Dalton waiting for the shotgun snap. He has the ball. His pass knocked way up in the air near the line of scrimmage. Intercepted at the 11-yard line. And the Ravens will bring it down to about the 3.
Amazing.
That ball was shot up into the air like a geyser. It was eventually caught by Lardarius Webb, and Baltimore will have it at the 3-yard line with 1:31 left in the half.
That was Dalton's 3rd interception of the first half. He had 4 in the game, and Terrence West ran it in on the next play to make it 17-0 Ravens. Here's safety George Iloka on Dalton's rough day.
We obviously, if he's a Pro Bowl quarterback, that doesn't happen too often. So we know he'll bounce back. I don't really concern myself with happening on that side of the ball. Kind of just got to focus on your side, and that's what we tried to do today.
For the Bengals to have a chance in the second half, they were probably going to need some takeaways on defense, and they got one on Baltimore's first possession of the third quarter.
On 2nd and 13, shotgun snap, Flacco back to throw, screen.
Pick it.
Deflected.
Yeah.
And is it intercepted?
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
Nick Vigil comes away with a deflection. It was a little bit behind West. It ricocheted off him, and Nick Vigil comes up with a pick, and it'll give the Bengals a short field at the Baltimore 27-yard line.
But after driving to the Ravens 6, the Bengals turned it over again.
Dalton dries off his hands on a towel attached to his waist. Has the football, looking into the end zone to throw. Pump fakes.
Uh-oh.
Now gets hit from behind. The ball squirts out, and the Baltimore Ravens are fighting to get it. Let's see who recovers at the 12-yard line.
Suggs. Suggs forced the fumble. Suggs came around the edge and forced it, Dan.
And Baltimore comes out of the pile with a football. Michael Pierce has the ball at the bottom of that pile.
2 sacks and a forced fumble for Suggs, who gave Cedric Obwehi fits. The Ravens had 0 passing yards in the second half because they didn't have to throw. They ran it 42 times in the game, counted on their defense and kicking game, and won 20-0. A.J. Green finished with 5 catches for 74 yards, and I spoke to him after the game.
Was it as frustrating as any game you played in?
Oh, it was up there. You know, this is tough, man. Being the opener, we want to give our fans, you know, something to cheer about, and we didn't do any of that today. So that sucks. But it's a good thing we have a game coming up on Thursday to try to get this taste out of mouth. So.
play long enough, you'll be in games like this. But because it was the opener, does it really make you, you question how good the team is?
No, I don't question it. Just the way the cards fell today. I know that a lot of the tip balls just happen to fall right in the defense hands, and it's tough.
How good is Baltimore's defense?
It's a great defense, a real great defense. The past 7 years, their defense has been great. So that's nothing new to us. Well, we know that if we lost the turnover ratio, that it's going to be a tough game for us, and that showed that again today.
Guys tend to dread Thursday night games. It sounds like in this case you're looking forward to it.
Yeah, I'm ready.
Notice that he didn't say, I will be ready. He said, I'm ready. I got the sense he would have liked to get back out there on Sunday night instead of waiting for the Texans to come to town on Thursday. Houston had a rough day as well, losing at home to Jacksonville 29-7. The Texans switched quarterbacks at halftime, yanking Tom Savage in favor of rookie Deshaun Watson, the 12th pick in the draft out of Clemson. The two of them were sacked a total of 10 times. Four Houston players left the game with concussions. Linebacker Brian Cushing, tight ends Ryan Griffin and C.J. Fedorowicz, and receiver Bruce Ellington. With concussion protocol rules, that makes all four big question marks for Thursday night. J.J. Watt injured his finger early in the game and finished with one tackle. All right, time to bring in my broadcast partner, Dave Lapham. Lap, I feel like my worst fears were confirmed. We wondered all year how good this offensive line was going to be, and at least on day one, they really struggled against Baltimore.
They did, Dan, and the quarterback was struggling, and it kind of, the hand fits the glove. It's, what comes first, the chicken or the egg. But as a former lineman, when your quarterback's struggling, that's when you have to dig down and give him more time and more space. You can't lessen it. You can't compound his problem. I mean, if he's having an off day throwing the football, you got to give him every confidence in the world. He doesn't have to worry about somebody smoking him from his blind side in the middle of his shoulder blades, or sacking him and stripping the football away from him or doing any of that. I mean, you have to give him an opportunity to see the football field. And there were just guys in his face all day. And I'm not saying Andy played well. Andy knows he stunk. He said, it sucks. I was bad. And it was. But I'll tell you what, if I'm a lineman, I'm looking at that tape, I shoulder some of the burden of responsibility as well, because there's no doubt that the way they played was up to snuff.
The Bengals had five turnovers, four interceptions for Andy. He also coughed up a fumble when he got hit from behind by Terrell Suggs. To me, the one that hurt the most came early in the second quarter. Baltimore led 3-0. The Bengals drove it 82 yards from their own 5 inside the Ravens' 10. And on 3rd-and-7 from the 9, Andy got picked off in the end zone by C.J. Mosley.
Yeah, he was saying after the game that, he saw something in the back of the end zone, saw somebody he thought he could get the football to. He shouldn't have made the throw. Mosley had really good position. He should have checked it down. I think Gio was a guy that he could have checked it down to, but hindsight's 20/20. He made an uncharacteristic decision, and at that point, when you're down, 3-0, you don't want to take the potential 3 points off the board that would have tied it. And three times inside the 15-yard line, I mean, you're taking points off the board. At one stage was a 17-0 football game. Shoot, you're sitting there. If you even just kick field goals on all three of those possessions, you're in a one-score game. So Bengals self-destructed. They got themselves in their own schedule and with their own worst enemy today, Dan.
Lap, Andy Dalton in the season opening game had a passer rating of 28.4. No touchdown passes, 4 interceptions. He also fumbled once. He got sacked 5 times. It's one of the worst games of his career. I guess, thankfully, the last time he had a clunker of this magnitude, he bounced back with one of the best games of his career.
You're right, Dan. I mean, he went from the lowest of lows, 2.0 quarterback rating against the Cleveland Browns on a Thursday night a few years back, and the following game went down to New Orleans and had a quarterback rating of in the 140 range, an all-time career high. So he didn't let one bad game turn into two, and that's what he was talking about in the post game, was that, he said, I'm going to go home and look at this right away. I'm going to go home and figure out what the heck I did wrong and learn from it and build on it and bounce back. And for the first time in his sports career, youth sports all the way up, last year lost 3 games in a row. So he doesn't lose back-to-back games very often, and he's bound and determined to not let that happen again. All I can say is Super Bowl 16 season, Kenny Anderson got benched with a 2.8 quarterback rating against Seattle in the first quarter of that football game. All he did was bounce back and take us to the Super Bowl and win league MVP. So, You know, one quarter, one half, one game does not a season make. And Andy Dalton's career speaks to the fact that this was an aberration, not a norm.
Terrell Suggs won the head-to-head matchup against Cedric Obwehi. There's no question about that. How concerned are you about Cedric's confidence, his mindset, after all the work he put in the offseason to really struggle against a veteran like Suggs in week one?
Yeah, I mean, it's a concern. But if I'm a coach, where the hell's the help? I mean, if you got a guy that's dying out there and he can't handle the guy, help is that's in my mind, that's the bottom line. So I think, you know, I think Cedric should feel badly about it, and I think the coaches should feel badly about it, leaving him out there, hanging him out to dry against a guy that was better than him. You know, I mean, I guess if you want to test a guy's fiber and character, this is a test because, yeah, I hope his confidence isn't rattled to the point where he doesn't bounce back.
The Bengals lost a starting offensive lineman during the game as Trey Hopkins exited with a knee injury. Jeff Hobson of Bengals.com reports that the Bengals fear it's a major injury. T.J. Johnson took over for Hopkins at right guard. Let's turn the page and get to know the person under the pads as I visit with a former Bengal who went on to have an outstanding career in broadcasting. Time for some fun facts with a guy who is picked 40th on the list of the top 50 retired players in Bengals history, former safety Solomon Wilcots, an eighth-round draft pick out of Colorado back in 1987. Is it true you did not even have a phone on draft day?
That's very true. You do your homework. I had two roommates my senior year in college who refused to pay the phone bill. And so I said, well, I could go ahead and pay it, but then they're going to use it and run it up every month, and I'm going to be stuck with a bill. So what I did is I went ahead and allowed them to disconnect it because the other two wouldn't pay, and I would use the phone of my friend who lived across the hall from me. And so when we were going through the whole draft process, they says, we want your draft day phone number. I knew I was going to be at my apartment in Boulder, Colorado, but I had to give Cam Jones's phone number. This is the last guy that you want to give out his number to control something that's so important in your life. But yeah, I gave him that number, and I just remember him yelling across the hall. He said, Moon, that's what he called me, Moon, Cincinnati Bengals are on the phone. And I had to run over to his apartment, and there was Dick LeBeau on the phone. It was one of the best phone calls I ever received, and it wasn't even on my phone.
We're doing fun facts with Solomon Wilcots. You mentioned Dick LeBeau. You once said he unlocked the mysteries of football. In what way?
In ways that help you to understand what offenses are trying to do to you and what you needed to do to stop them. It's something as simple as this. Offenses, they are the ones who are on a clock. That quarterback doesn't get to hold on to the ball forever. He's got to get rid of it. And his receiver has to get to the designated point at the time when the quarterback expects him to get there. And if he's not there, it's an incomplete. And if you get there first, you get to catch it, it's an interception. That the timing of the offense, everything's predicated on timing. And as a defensive back, your job is just to disrupt timing. You don't have to cover the guy all over the field like defensive backs believe they have to. All you have to do is disrupt timing. You got pass rush helping you to do that. You got the quarterback's insecurity of getting blitzed to help with that. And you get to jam the receiver at the line of scrimmage to help to prevent timing. So just something as simple as that goes such a long way in unlocking a mystery of what NFL offenses are all about and what they're trying to do to you.
We're visiting with Solomon Wilcots. David Fulcher checked in at number 6 on the list, the highest rated defensive back. And one of the reasons why he was so effective in freelancing on defense is that you helped cover for him in the secondary. Was that instinct on your part, or was it very choreographed? When Fulcher does this, I've got to do that.
It was about knowing that Dave would take chances. That Dave, and he had great instincts. He had not only the ability to make it work, he had the instincts to be able to do it at a time when the offense never thought he would. And I kind of had to know when he started creeping up to the line of scrimmage, I was like, oh, no, he's blitzing, and he's not supposed to blitz. He's supposed to cover over here. So someone had to cover. And I just remember a few Mondays after we would have games, and Dick LeBeau, I mean, he would give it to me. He would just – and I'm like, oh, coach, I didn't make – you didn't complain. You just took it. But I remember one Monday I went in, I asked Coach LeBeau, I said, hey, is there something wrong here? Am I mistaken? David made the mistake, but then you ripped me. He was like,
That's your job. Your job is to be wherever he's not. And he helped me to understand that what kind of player David was and how he used David in the defense. Ryan Clark, who played for Dick LeBeau in Pittsburgh, had to do the same kind of things. He and I would have these conversations. He never knew what Troy Polamalu was going to do. Troy Polamalu in Pittsburgh playing for Dick LeBeau was the same exact player that David Folcher was 20 years prior, playing in the same defense. And so that's how Dick LeBeau used his strong safety and his free safety and finding that right player. And David was that guy now who had instincts and incredible ability for a big man to go out and make big plays.
We're doing Fun Facts with Solomon Wilcots. In training camp before your second season, Sam Weich decided to mix things up. He took black players and roomed them with white players. He took offensive players and roomed them with defensive players. Mm-hmm. What impact did that have?
Bruce Reimers, offensive lineman, was my roommate. I would visit Eric Thomas. I think he was with Joe Walter. Anybody know, Joe was a grumpy dude. You know, Joe didn't play. But Eric is such a jolly guy that he could bring out the best in a Joe Walter. But Sam, it worked. Sam knew what he was doing. Other than that, I'm a defensive back. We don't hang out with offensive linemen. And there's no way that a guy from California and Eric Thomas is going to hang out with a guy from Texas like Joe Walter. I mean, so that kind of forward thinking, it did help us become closer as a team. We were able to spend time off the field with one another and with guys that we normally would not have spent time with. And I just remember week two, we went out and played Philadelphia that year. That's the year that the Eagles had a great team. Buddy Ryan's the coach. They got big Reggie White on the defensive line, Jerome Brown, Chris Carter, Mike Quick, Randall Cunningham. He had a great team. And we went out there, and they jumped out on us. But I just remember during that period, we stuck together. The offensive line started taking over. Defense, we started making plays. We got out of there with a win. But I think it was on that day, week two in 88, that we really knew that we had a chance to be a great team. And we were close, and we had one another's back no matter what happened. And even when we went through some bumpy spots in the season, there was never any doubt that we were kind of a team of destiny.
Couple more questions for Solomon Wilcots. That team goes to Super Bowl 23. The night before the game, unfortunately, Stanley Wilson had his cocaine relapse. Mm-hmm. You were one of the last people that spoke to him before the team found out, correct?
Yeah, that is true. I remember he and Eddie Brown, myself, and Eric Thomas, we were on the same floor, so we got on the elevator together to get ready to go down to a team meeting. And Stanley, at the last minute, says, as the door was closing, says, "I forgot my playbook." And he shot out, and the door closed behind him as he went back to his room. We're sitting in the meeting room that night, and they said, "Is everyone here?" Sam asked, and I remember Eddie was like, "Hey, Stanley went to go get his playbook." He said, "He'll be here in a second." So we're waiting 5 minutes, 10 minutes. And, you know, Sam's thinking, we got to get this meeting going. Let's start the meeting. But he sent Jim Anderson back to go get Stanley. Next thing you know, maybe 15 minutes later, Sam, with tears in his eyes and, you know, sort of interrupted everyone, said, "Guys, Stanley couldn't make it." And we were like, "What are you talking about?" He proceeded to tell us about the relapse that Stanley had. And, you know, that's something that has stuck with me for about 30 years, you know, for all this time. And, you know, I talk with Marvin about this. I talk with a lot of other NFL coaches about when you go to a Super Bowl, this is where character really counts. This is where all having the right people on your team counts. And not that Stanley was a bad person, but it's just about understanding that the pressure of such a game and of such a moment, it's going to reveal all things. I remember Chris Berman and I were talking at one Super Bowl. We were providing coverage and something had happened with one player in Miami. And I coined the phrase by saying, you know, you can only win the game the day of kickoff, but you can lose it between now and kickoff. In other words, some player slips out into the night, does something silly, and next thing you know, that it serves as a huge distraction for their team who is trying to get ready to play the game of their lives. So that's what I remember about it. I do remember a few years later going out to California. I was covering for ESPN as a correspondent a case where Stanley Wilson was he was going to get three strikes and you're out. So he was going to get life for a robbery, for a home invasion. And I watched the judge render the verdict. I remember writing a letter to the judge saying Stanley never hurt anyone physically. He only hurt himself. And I tried to prevail on the judge to not give him life. I don't agree with the mandatory prison sentencing. And so Stanley Wilson does not deserve to be in jail for life for what he did. We all forgive him. We love him. But I know what, he was one heck of a football player. I wish he would have played that day. We needed somebody to block Ronnie Lott. Trust me.
Last thing for Solomon Wilcots. You're from California.
Mm-hmm.
You went to Colorado.
Yeah.
But you settled in Cincinnati after playing for the Bengals. Yeah. What is it about this team and this city that got under your skin?
Well, it was interesting because when I was drafted, I remember I didn't quite know where Cincinnati was. I had never been east of the Mississippi River. And so when I came here, I didn't know what to expect. But, you know, I started working for an insurance firm over at Midland, American Modern Home. And I worked there every year during the offseason. I worked as an underwriter, worked as a claim adjuster. I worked in our HR department. And then when I was done playing, I went over to Channel 5 and worked with some really good people there who were great to me. I learned so much from them. And I don't know that I would still be here had I not had the opportunity to work with such good people and have them in my life. None of us succeed on our own. We need a community of people. And I always wanted to be able to at least give back to that community in some way, shape, or form. And I think that's what makes Cincinnati special. I think it is a place that is about community. And I think the people here can tell if you're genuine or not. They could tell if you are a hard worker. They could tell if you're in it for you or if you're in it for the big picture. If you're in it for the big picture, it works out. If you're in it for you, it doesn't go so well. And so I that's what I love about Cincinnati. I tell people, even when I go back to L.A., people are like, you still live in Cincinnati? How could you live there? I said, you know what? It's a great place. We don't have traffic. I don't have to wait in line at the post office. I go to the coffee shop. My girl already has my coffee made. She knows me. And that's what I love. That's what I like. And that's what makes Cincinnati a special place. I love it.
We're happy it worked out that way. Appreciate the time. And congratulations again on being in the first 50.
Thanks for having me, Dan. Thank you.
As part of the celebration of the Bengals' 50th season, the team's all-time greatest players will be recognized at every regular season home game. And this Thursday night against Houston, Takeo Spikes, Willie Anderson, Chris Collinsworth, and Chad Johnson will be among the players in attendance. That's going to do it for this edition of the podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play to have the latest episode delivered right to you. And if you enjoy it, please take the time to give us a 5-star rating. I'm Dan Hoard, and thanks for listening to the Bengals Booth Podcast.